Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And we're going to continue our romp through the...
Right, we're off the bus now.
Yeah, we're off the bus.
Right.
Off the bus.
Right.
And onto a natural, not natural gas bus. No, whatever.
Okay, right.
Diesel.
So a few of those sort of hot topics, I think, that are
trees and gas.
Trees and gas and cannabis.
Oh, and cannabis, wow.
Trees and gas and cannabis. Whew. Yeah. Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. So for starters, all right, so this, and what spurs this right now is that there was a committee report at the City Council meeting last night.
Based on
a December hearing having to do with a proposal to ban
natural
gas
and new construction.
New natural gas hookups, right.
With some exceptions. Some exceptions.
Yeah, exemptions. The Brookline passed something, but the thing is, as
it's
it was pointed out, it...
Yeah.
I think Councilor McGovern and several others pointed out that they came to the version that they have
30
after
stakeholder meetings.
They had a lot of stakeholder meetings, and they had to carve out certain exemptions, you know, for restaurant uses.
And also personal ovens in one's house.
So if
you
somebody really is insistent
oven.
On that, they don't want to
take
away that
choice. I think
that
was a big problem. That's why the final vote, they have town meetings there, so it was 200-something to like two.
But
so the process was there, though, and we haven't done
right.
that yet.
Now, it's an interesting thing, and it's sort of like a kind of a repeat of a discussion that happened at a previous city council meeting about the tree protection ordinance, cutting moratorium extension that's been proposed, where there were some, I think it was Councilor Zondervan says, we must do this right now, immediately, we don't need any more discussion. Yeah. And Councilors McGovern and several others says, I think we do, and they prevailed and actually... required that that had to be a matter of discussion at this
which
Health and Environment
Committee.
Which is
January 22nd.
Which just took
place. Already, the committee report or the trend was already available.
And not surprisingly, the recommendation came out of that and was passed to a second reading last night to actually do an extension of the current, is it early March or late February?
Well, it would have been March, and now it's...
goes till December 31st, or until the city council gets off its butt and actually passes a more permanent regulation, a more permanent ordinance about this, which I think they probably will before December 31st, but I don't know. I was born yesterday.
Owen had quite a, at least I read the committee report, he had quite a lot to say in that about the different issues and things, and they had more data there about actual permits that were applied and some of the restrictions or the barriers, the hiring and all that stuff. Yeah.
Right. So no surprise to anyone, the extension was granted through December 31st or until they passed the next round of this. It was interesting. I find that discussion, that's on the trees,
right?
Well, we should probably go back to the natural gas part here, right?
But there was
a lot of discussion about the tree one here, but on the natural gas,
a lot of public comment on that one too.
A lot of public comment. There were industry people. There were some serious gung-ho environmental people, including people who were actively involved in the net zero discussion some years ago, who served on the net zero committee. Who says, well, not so fast. You know, there is this issue to say, okay, if you start chopping off gas hookups here and then saying we have to go all electric and whatever, well, what is it? 50% of the energy generation for electricity is via natural gas. So all you're doing is moving it around.
Until we do get 100% renewables, we did get rid of coal. Massachusetts is one of the few, you know, no coal at all is used here for electricity. However, we do use natural gas. So I think some people are missing that point. It's like, you still are getting your electricity needs 50% from natural gas.
You know, people sometimes think, for example, when you have an electric car, that somehow miraculously the electricity just appears. But the thing is, that's generated somewhere. Yeah. So if there is at least some chance, today at least, maybe not
tomorrow. Well, if it's in your own driveway, which a lot of people have those electric cars, and you have solar on your house, then you're getting it
that's
from
a different matter, right?
So but the thing that's is, not
if
everybody.
If it's all renewable generation, great.
Which is where everyone wants to get to.
So how
everybody says that.
So much of this is a matter of how do you get from here to there.
Steps.
In steps, yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a diehard incrementalist.
Me too. We're sunk.
perhaps.
We're not on that progressive
I don't go with the
Bernie's
and you know, even Elizabeth, drive ahead of the curve crowd, you know. But anyway, so there will be stakeholder meetings. That was one of the orders that came out of this. I think Councilor Vice Mayor Mallon actually was very, very well spoken in arguing why, in fact, the stakeholder input is crucial and you cannot just blow it off.
Right.
You know, the rhetoric is interesting, though. You know, the Councilor Zondervan very much is of the, well, this will happen, this must happen, and that's it. Which basically almost says, like, in other words, you don't really want to hear the stakeholders much, do you? Mm-hmm. You just want to do what you want to do. But because he's more mandate-oriented, you know, do as you're told. When Patty Nolan had input about, I think, was it either on the natural gas or on the trees? I'm not
Maybe both.
Maybe both. But you can kind of see they're both they're both very idealistic, kind of climate change zealous people. But Patty's rhetoric is very much more oriented toward the incentives and convincing people that there are really good alternatives, which there are, really, these convection cookie methods and whatever.
But again, it depends. I mean, if you're a renter or if you live... It's funny. There's a lot of stuff about affordable housing, but I think a lot of affordable housing stuff is built all electric anyway because I think it's safer. I don't know if it's... I mean, do you know that for a fact? I know where I'm living right now, which is a mixed... income, it's all electric.
Some of it is because you didn't have to build a basement.
That so that to, could to support be. And I actually I think that's true of a lot of the places that are being built.
So if you're just building on a slab, you can build a lot.
Well, now they're
cheaper.
Doing maybe the heat throw, whatever. I mean, I think a lot of stuff. Yeah. Anyway.
Right.
I guess it was labs and hospitals that are more dependent.
But if,
on
as Patty was mentioning, you know, things like geothermal for heating and cooling, whatever.
That's been
there's a lot of upfront cost in doing that.
Well, they did the King School.
I know, but but that's a huge multi, like $100+ million investment.
Right.
You know, the thing
but
is,
but the city's committed to net zero, and they're doing where they
can. Right. But the thing is, if you're building new housing, whether it's affordable housing or any housing like that.
Well, that's why we need to hear from stakeholders. We need to hear from affordable housing developers. Right. We need to hear from.
But there are upfront costs, and you know, and to what degree is it okay to just sort of say, well, if you want to do anything in this city, like insulate your home, fix your roof, doing like here, the only way you're going to let you do it is by you have to pay $100,000 interest fee.
But also, wasn't there wasn't some back and forth about the solicitor's opinion? I think that drew some good comment because I mean, she brought and Brookline is. It is being looked at by the Attorney General. I mean, it's not a done deal yet in Brookline.
You know, it's interesting, and it actually relates to another topic we were going to talk about, having to do with cannabis regulation,
And
there is a fundamental conflict sometimes when you see things amongst local legislatures, and I'm sure it's not just Cambridge.
No.
But it's definitely, you definitely see in Cambridge, which is the, well, I know the law says this, but I want it now, right? In other words... you know, the law, if basically there if there are interstate commerce regulations that say there are certain things you can regulate, certain things you can't regulate, right? And then you say, but climate change and we must do this. Like, well, you know, honestly, if there are certain legal protections that allow certain things to happen, you can't just wish them away, right?
Well, we have state rights. Are we going to have city rights now? I don't know.
No, but
I mean, some things... reasonable, but you do have to go along with what is existing law.
Exactly.
And see what happens.
I mean, one thing kind of slightly peripheral here was this building on Arnold Circle. Where, in fact, the city was strong-arming the... I mean, it was a long, long history of this property, but the thing in the end, they were going to do a major rehabilitation of the property. I think there may be 12 units involved.
12 units, right.
And then the...
it's a question of inclusionary zoning.
That's right. So you're taking an existing 12-unit building, but you're doing a major rehab.
Yeah.
So is the person who's fixing up the building required to give away two of the units to the city, essentially?
Right. Or pay the difference. Isn't that what happened?
Well, what ended up happening... under inclusion, if it was truly inclusionary zoning, that wouldn't be an option.
That's
There's no buyout. It is in Boston, but not in Cambridge. So you would just have to give the city the units, right? And then they argued it in court. And I have to say, I think the legal thinking was pretty much that they were going to win that one. And that might have actually jeopardized inclusionary housing for all of Cambridge.
So they came to a settlement with this?
The thing is, I mean, there was, I think, a legal regulatory taking issue there.
Right.
But there's also this issue is at some point where you're now, if you are still the owner, but you're required to accept only a very much more modest rent for it, is that rent control? And under the current state law, from dating to early January of 1995,
you can't do that.
That's not legal.
Right.
So the thing is, but we want it because don't you know there's an affordable housing crisis? Well, that may be true, but the thing is that what's the law say? You can't just wish it into existence if the law says otherwise.
So what ended up happening there?
They did a settlement, and I think the city was happy with that because
so
I think they were worried.
Got money into the Affordable Housing Trust? Is that what happened?
I think it worked out that way.
Yeah.
And the developer, just this way, they could just have a free hand, and it was worth it for them to just do that settlement.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing is, I think we are kind of walking the line between what is fully legal and what isn't sometimes. You know, actually, one, might as well mention it right now then. So there was a Cambridge Day had a article reported today, you know, I guess we knew, a lot of us knew it was coming, had to do with Revolutionary Clinics, which is a medical marijuana dispensary that already operates out of several locations.
Yeah.
And in Somerville, has yet to actually, even though they've outfitted the building, they've yet to open as a medical marijuana dispensary.
The one right on Mass Ave.
Just at Norfolk and Mass Ave. But the thing is that you know, so they're presumably they're going to open like soon, as a medical marijuana dispensary.
No, but I thought they can't even do that.
No, I think they can do that.
No. No, I think the moratorium was on.
No.
Well, then why were all these people saying they couldn't buy their medicine anymore? It wouldn't be.
I forget the deal.
So what is it?
So anyway, what happened there was that because there are these economic empowerment and social equity applicants.
Economic empowerment.
There were some guidelines written by a cannabis control commission that suggested that when cities are actually establishing their own local rules of how to allow these things or forbid these things, that in fact they recommended certain guidelines, including giving some advantages to social equity and or
economic
income.
But did they spell out how to give them?
I don't know that they did exactly. But the thing is that, you know, at the time I said to myself, well, that's great. You can write guidelines.
Yeah, but that's
and
all
you
it
can
is
say, because we think, wouldn't it be great? So let's just wish this law into existence.
Mm.
But the truth is, when that ballot question passed,
right,
the ballot question that made recreational marijuana, adult use marijuana legal, you know, so you can actually legally sell these things through these no longer medical marijuana dispensaries, explicitly in the law, it says that if you're a medical marijuana dispensary, once that's passed, then you can
so the law
flip
says
it
that.
By right. Hmm. Yeah, it's right in there. And
so is that what the challenge was by right?
Yes.
Because
they said,
we're refresh people because we don't.
So what happened was this. So the city council debated
back
endlessly.
In the fall, right?
Oh, my goodness. They took a long, long time with this. Many hearings here and a lot of vitriol and a lot of rather mean-spirited mailings from Richard Harding. Sorry, Richard. What you did was really out of line. You know, attacking people, you know, bringing race into it, referring to...
Who were against having a moratorium.
Right. So the thing is, so there were different ways of doing this. So there was what they call the Zondervan Siddiqui way, which is to give this like a head start to economic empowerment, social equity, which is a very nice sentiment, but I thought rather clearly conflicted with what the state law permits revolutionary clinics to do as of right. Which is that once they go through the same regulatory, they can just start doing it pretty much.
So that is the basis of the suit that Revolutionary
the city council went right ahead and passed on a 7-2 vote and something which I thought was actionable. And so Revolutionary Clinics filed a lawsuit and now there's an injunction, you know, from a judge. So. Anyway, that's what that newspaper article is about.
And what does an injunction mean?
Basically,
you cannot enact this until we.
I think the other places can't open, you know, because they're going to be given a head start unless the Revolutionary Clinics are allowed to open.
So if Revolutionary Clinics can open, then anybody can open.
Which then would violate what is currently the city council
ordinance.
Right,
but right now the injunction means that, okay, anyone ready to open, you can open. during this time.
Well, that would be true, but you still have certain regulatory steps you have to go
through. Well, right, assuming that they...
But if you play it straight and you meet all the conditions, then you should be able to be permitted to flip from not only medical marijuana, but also to the adult use recreational marijuana. So, and it was interesting because at the time, Denise Simmons had the alternative version of this, which is what she got... this mean-spirited citywide mailing where she said, look, this is actionable. There's going to be a lawsuit if you do this here.
What was her alternative?
I think it was basically working out a kind of an understanding that maybe actually would allow them to work them together, maybe
buy your product through them, but maybe have an agreement.
I think there was also sort of a fund to be established,
City
Solicitor had a hard time sort of saying,
how could you do that?
Because these are private parties, you can't have it go to the city.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So there was some rough work there, right?
Yeah.
But fundamentally, I think it was at least more cognizant of the law, right?
So she was one of the no votes, as was Toomey?
I think so, yeah. So anyway, that's where it stands. So apparently the judge has ruled.
There's some meeting today, I guess, privately of the solicitor.
Oh, everybody's scrambling. People are scrambling today, to be sure. You know, I have to say, though, Counselor Zondervan kind of did another bad move, though. In this newspaper article, he is quoted saying, well, it ain't over till it's over, and they still have to go through a regulatory process, so there's lots of ways I forget his language exactly, but there's a lot of barriers we can still put in front of revolutionary clinics.
And I said, he said the language to that effect,
and it basically what you said, well, that's pretty actionable, too. I'm sorry. If you're basically, as an elected official, saying, oh, we're just going to regulatorily block you because we don't like the fact that you filed a lawsuit, that's retaliation. And that's a stupid thing to have said. And I'm sorry. And we'll see where it goes.
Meanwhile, it's just one too many for me.
Yeah, well, same here. Same
here, honestly. I mean, everyone's saying there's going to be this gold rush of money coming in and all. I just think it's a mess. I just think it's a mess. I can already smell it on the street. I'm just too old for this. Right. Not that I never smoked, I did, but it's just we're barking up the wrong tree. Ooh, I'm looking at my metaphors. You know, barking up the wrong tree.
I know. So much of the discussion makes it out as though it's all the talk about the medical this and like that, but the real bottom line about this is a lot of this is still just about good old capitalism. This is about making serious bucks.
Yeah. And but who's paying make for this? Bucks? Who has the money for all this? How is that economically? Are they going to offer it for less?
I saw a pop-up store in Central Square putting up a denim jacket that looked crappier than mine for $150.
I'm
bet somebody bought it.
But I'm all for people that, different disenfranchised running businesses, but what is their product going to sell for? Who are they selling to? Is it going to be cheap? Is it going to be discounted? Are you going to get
I'm sure there are people who were never entirely comfortable buying their dope through a dealer.
In California, there's still the black market rules.
I know, there will still be that here, and it'll still be
less
expensive.
And it hurts the small growers, not forget who or what color they are, but there's small growers that have always been growing it that are out of the system because the big companies are buying it from these big farms that they're running.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the solution is.
I don't know either, but one other thing, it's sort of a mild, maybe it's a minor issue, I don't know, but... if you're a property owner and you've got a retail location up for potential rent, there's some of them who are actually holding out because they figured, well, the medical marijuana or the recreational marijuana place, they'll pay more rent.
So they may not want that clientele, though, or they may not want that crowd.
True.
They may not
potentially,
want,
But the thing is, I don't want to see, every potential... right now, Central Kitchen is closing, and... that's going to be the Ben Zan, Marvin Gilmore.
That one. What about the old Harvest Co-op?
The Harvest Co-op is the other one. That's a social equity applicant.
And then you have the one.
Honestly,
in the corner,
if I was a manager, I might be a little less predisposed toward that one. But I think the betting money is that they're all going to get permitted.
Three Central, right within like.
And then another one up
a
at
stone's throw
up at the hair salon up by next to sort of 1369.
What
in Central Square right up.
And what about Evergood? What's the story with that?
I think that was another one. Yeah, there's another one up between.
We could have. It's all depending on how many liquor licenses we could have up to nine or something.
Something like eight
it's
or
crazy.
Nine. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Will they all survive? They're making their money.
I don't know. You know, I mean, I have college age students. You know, so I should be sort of clued into what the demand is here. But maybe there are a lot of people who are just smoking dope these days. I don't know. I mean, you know, walk through Central Square, you'd think
we
it was...
have another. If he's in again, I guess we'll all have to do that. I don't know. Or eating it. I think eating it is preferable.
I think actually that's one of the things that
no
the
smell.
That the edibles becomes sort of a real attraction, I think, for sales.
But also has liabilities because how much to eat of an edible? Is it like candy and people with kids? I mean, Colorado has all kinds of statistics
One of the biggest concerns, some of us who are Central Square characters, we've had some real concerns about, which is that, so if you're operating a club and, you know, or a bar, you know, if somebody's starting to appear intoxicated or somebody wants to bring alcohol in or whatever, there's something about alcohol use that you can kind of regulate it because it takes time to get drunk.
People show themselves being kind of drunk more than somebody is high.
You see it coming, right? Or you can stop serving them liquor, whatever, right? What happens if somebody comes in with a pocket full of edibles or something and then, you know,
it's overdoses on it?
I don't know what the nature of overdoses are.
I'm not sure you'd really know, Robert. I think it's a little different.
Yeah, but you could definitely have some people who
go. They have a sign listed. Like you cannot bring in not things you don't buy here. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Like you can't bring in liquor to a liquor store. So
it's a brave new world we're entering here. Totally wacky and wild. You know.
So let's see.
We'll have free buses. Everybody's going to be high. What year is this again?
Oh, 2000.
This is 1969, right?
2020.
Here we go.
Oh, right, yeah.
We're all going back in time.
2020. Yeah.
It's true.
2020 vision. I don't think so. I think we have no vision.
I kind of agree.
Okay. All right.
Let me just get right back to the sort of civic end of things. Mm. I just want to mention, you know, for those who are interested, you know, actually I was joking just about, you know, over by my house, saying like, you know, for year after year after year, for 30 plus years, I've actually raked out the storm drains, keep them clear of all the leaves, right? And in all those 30 some odd years, there's only one time, one person, did I ever see anybody else in my neighborhood ever doing the same thing, you know, which I thought was pretty dreadful.
Doesn't the city do storm drains?
Well, the thing is, there's too many drains. So
do you mean rake out? You can't lift it up.
No, but you can take the leaves off the drain so that it operates.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, and everybody should do that. Keep a dirt rake around and just do it.
Or just clean the front of your house. Or just pick up trash in front of...
Yeah, just do that. You know, if you do that, take the load off public works. They have a lot of other things to do as well.
Cleaner city, yeah.
Do that. That's what being a good civic participant is about.
Yeah.
You know, is simple things like that.
Yeah.
All right? But anyway, so I'm sort of always preaching the gospel of like civic participation, do this, you know, you should really do that, you know. But then truth is that a lot of people just don't. And decades pass and they just don't really step up to the plate. And it's a shame. Mm. On the other hand, there are a lot of people who are coaches in little leagues who are doing wonderful community-oriented things. And, so great. Anyway, this is just a prelude to just mention that the thing is that, you know, the city is always still, it continues to look for people to serve on various city boards and commissions.
Which ones?
There are two that are live right now. One is the water board, which I believe
you can just show that if you want. Here we go.
Right here? Mm-hmm. So the deadline for, and I actually applied for this once upon a time myself.
Oh, you said that.
So if you've got some wherewithal and it's of interest in not only the Fresh Pond Reservation, the water supply, water quality issues.
It's an advisory role.
It's an advisory role.
It's like the recycling.
I mean, once upon a time, the water board was really sort of like they ruled. Hmm. But I think now the interpretation, whether this is legally binding or not, is that they are more advisory to the water department. But I think they still may actually have some hardcore regulatory authority if they ever chose to exercise it. But anyway, February 15th is the deadline for that. So if you have any interest in that, I would definitely encourage you to do that.
And then there is the Cambridge Board of Zoning. That's a big, heavy one.
There are some heavy lifting boards, to be sure. Planning Board and Board of Zoning Appeals probably at the top of the list. So if that's something that interests you.
5 members and up to 7 associate members.
And sometimes the associate members rotate in to become regular members.
Yeah.
you know, but anyway, the deadline for that was that, I think, February 1st or something like that, or January 31st.
That's Friday.
So that's this Friday. Yeah. So, it, you know, again, I don't want to sugarcoat it. I think mm-hmm. serving on the Board of Zoning Appeals.
Because they meet twice each month. Now, again, right. if you're in Minnesota, you may not meet. It's a very. Still, 3 to 4 hours. That's pretty intensive.
They adjudicate many things. It's yes. a very interesting position yeah. to hold, but you really have to be dedicated to do yeah. it. So if you got the stones to do it, I would suggest yeah. you consider applying to be on the Board of Zoning Appeals. As long as you're a fair-minded, mm-hmm. even-handed person.
And there's an online application system. If you just, well, Robert's got it listed on yeah, his Cambridge, site, but MA. Just go cambridgeman.gov/apply. Yeah. Probably find other positions.
When you go to that apply URL, yeah. It actually will give you, it'll actually tell you which boards are open. I mean, wow. I keep a listing of it myself.
Oh, here it is. Know, yeah, just opened
you know.
It. Wow.
Yeah. Ooh. But, you know, so anyway, it's
well, this is interesting because if you go to it, which I just did, you can see who's on it now.
Right. The city doesn't yeah. always keep up those lists. So okay. sometimes they're inaccurate. You know, again,
you have a list. Yes.
I try to keep it up yeah. a little better. But the thing is,
you can also see meeting minutes on some of these. Wow.
The city gets better. With every iteration, the city gets better.
Well, look who's on the Board of the Arts Council. I thought she left. Oh, well, never mind.
It may be old.
This might be old. Yeah. I bet it's old.
So, but anyway, I continue to encourage people to apply mm-hmm. to serve on not only regulatory boards, but yep. voluntary advisory
Definitely.
Boards.
I was on the Women's Commission for many years, and I was on the Recycling Advisory Committee with you.
Yeah.
And then you stayed on a little after me.
Yeah. It's a great education, yeah. and it's just a great, great way to serve your city and your friends and your fellow residents. Yes. I really strongly encourage
yeah,
it.
Time is winding down. Look at that.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. So anyway, so take a free bus, go get really, really yeah. high. No,
it's hug a tree.
Hug a tree. And I guess we'll see you maybe next week then on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay, bye.